She always finishes her talks when the listeners are the most enthusiastic. She likes to say that the lessons of the gospel began with Jesus, but no one knows when and how they will end. Chapter 38, Tobias Home. On my third day in the chambers of rectification, Tobias delighted me with a pleasant surprise. After work, when the night attendants had taken over, I was taken to his home, where moments of instructive entertainment awaited me. When we arrived, he introduced me to two women, one already elderly and the other approaching middle age. He explained that the first was his sister, the second his wife. Lucian and Hilda, both gracious and affable, welcomed me cordially. We gathered in library, where I noticed beautifully bound books, all works of great spiritual value. Hilda invited me into the garden to see some delicately shaded arbors. Each residence in the astral city seemed to specialize in raising certain flowers. Liza's home contained gloxinias and hundreds of lilies, while numerous hydrangea banks rose luxuriantly from a carpet of violets at Tobias' home. Here and there rose clusters of slender trees, reminding me of young bamboo, whose upper branches were joined by enormous flowery boughs of a curious climbing plant, forming a graceful canopy. An intoxicating fragrance floated in the air. I couldn't put my admiration fully into words. We were speaking of the beauty of the landscape in general, as seen from the tangle of the Ministry of Regeneration, when Lucina called us back to the house for a light meal. Enchanted with the simple and cordial family atmosphere, I could find no words to give thanks to my host. After some friendly talk, Tobias said, smiling, "My friend Andre here is a newcomer to our ministry, and probably doesn't know my family background yet." They all smiled at me, and, noticing my silent interest, the head of the household continued, "In fact, there are several families similar to ours here. You see, I was married twice," he added, pointing to both ladies good-humoredly. "Yes, indeed," I stammered, extremely confused. "You mean that both Hilda and Luciana shared your experiences on Earth?"
"Exactly,"
he answered calmly. Hilda turned to me and said apologetically, "You must excuse our Tobias, brother Andre. Whenever we entertain newcomers from Earth, he always starts talking about the past."
"And why not?"
Tobias asked, good-humoredly. "Shouldn't it be a motive of legitimate joy to conquer the monster of jealousy, acquiring at least a small degree of true brotherly love? The problem really does concern us all," I remarked. "There are millions of people on Earth who have twice made sacred marriage vows. How would we resolve such a delicate sentimental problem in the face of spiritual survival? We know that physical death merely transforms without destroying, and that spirit ties continue unbroken throughout infinity. How to proceed, then? Condemn the man or woman for marrying more than once? We would find millions of creatures in the same circumstances. I have often wondered at the passage in the Gospel in which the Master, referring to marriage in eternity, promises us the life of angels. We must remember, however," added the kind host, "with all due respect to our Lord, that we aren't yet in the sphere of angels, but that of discarnate people." "But how can we cope with such a problem here?" I asked. "Very simply. We know that between the irrational animal and rational man there are a series of gradational positions. Likewise, between ourselves and the angels there is a great distance to travel. Therefore, how could we aspire to the company of such angelic beings if we aren't even fraternal with each other? Of course, there are strong-hearted travelers who, in a supreme effort of the will, face and surpass each obstacle they meet. The majority, however, can't do without bridges or the charitable help of a devoted guide. Because of this truth, cases of this nature are settled through genuine brotherhood, keeping in mind that true marriage, a union of souls, can never be broken." Luciana, who had kept silent, joined in, however, "It's only fair to add that we owe our present condition of happiness and comprehension to Hilda's spirit of love and self-denial." But Tobias' wife protested with humble dignity, "Oh, please. Don't bestow virtues on me which I don't possess. But, so that our guest might learn from my painful apprenticeship, I'll try to summarize our story." With an introductory gesture, she began her touching story,
Tobias and I were married while still very young, in deference to the sacred spirit affinity we felt. I don't think it necessary to describe the happiness of two souls who, united by real love, are joined in the holy vows of matrimony. Death, however, seemed jealous of our great bliss, and ended my physical life when our second child was born. Our grief was indescribable. Tobias wept hopelessly while I felt incapable of controlling my own despair. Oh, the sad days I spent in the lower zone, stubbornly clutching to my husband and two children, deaf to all exhortations sent me by my spirit friends. I wanted to fight, like a mother hen defending her nest. Yet I realized that Tobias had to reorganize the home and that the children were badly in need of maternal care. My sister-in-law, who was single, couldn't stand the children, and the cook only feigned dedication to them. The two young nurses were unreliable girls, incapable of assuming any serious responsibilities. Faced with that unbearable situation, Tobias could no longer put off an urgent decision, and 1 year after my death he married Lucia. If you only knew how I fought against it, I was like a wounded tiger. In my ignorance, I went as far as to struggle against the poor girl, trying to kill her. It was then that Jesus, in his great mercy, granted me the providential visit of my maternal grandmother, who had passed over so many years before. I was greatly surprised to see her arriving somewhat casually, as if for no special purpose. She sat down and drew me to her lap, just as she used to when I was a child. She asked, tearfully, "Well now, my grandchild, what is your role in life? Are you a lioness or a soul conscious of God? Don't you see that our sister Luciana acts as a mother to your children, keeps your house, tends to your garden, and puts up with your husband's moods? Do you think she isn't good enough to become his temporary companion in the struggles of life? Is this the way to show your gratitude for divine benevolence and reward those who serve you? Do you want to accept Luciana as a slave, but despise her as a sister? Hilda, have you forgotten the teachings of the crucified? My poor, misguided grandchild." Throwing my arms around my grandmother's neck, I cried my heart out. I abandoned my old home in her company and came to serve in this blessed spirit colony. Luciana became as one of my daughters, and I began to devote all my energies to serious studies and to the moral improvement of my inner self. Tobias raised another family, which also became mine by sacred spirit bonds. I tried to help everyone in my old home, without exception. In time Tobias came to join me here, and finally, to our great joy, Luciana also arrived. This, my friend, is our story. But Hilda didn't tell you how much she had to go through to teach me with her example, added Luciana. Now no, objected Tobias' wife, stroking Luciana's hand. Luciana continued with a smile, "Thanks to Jesus and to Hilda I learned that there are different kinds of marriages, those of love, of fraternal motives, of tests, and of duty." The day Hilda granted me forgiveness with a fraternal kiss, I felt that my heart broke away from the monster of jealousy. Spiritual matrimony forges a bond of souls, while others, even though sacred, are merely covenants of duty needed for the readjustment of past errors or fulfillment of redeeming processes. And so we organized our new home based on true brotherhood, Tobias added. How are marriages made here? I asked, availing myself of a pause. Through vibratory combination, Tobias explained kindly, or to make it clearer, by perfect attunement. Unable to control my curiosity, and forgetting my manners, I went on, "But what is Luciana's position? Exactly? When I married Tobias, a widower, I should have known that our union would probably be fraternal. Yet it cost me much suffering to understand that. In fact, it is only logical to conclude that when a couple suffers from restlessness, incomprehension and sadness, their marriage is only a physical union, not a spiritual bond." I still had another question, but could find no words to express it without seeming unduly indiscreet. Hilda sensed my thoughts, however. "Don't worry, Luciana is already spiritually betrothed. Her companion of many earthly existences returned to the physical sphere a few years ago and she'll follow him next year. I think the happy meeting will be in Sao Paulo." We all smiled joyfully. At that moment Tobias was called to the chambers of rectification to attend to a serious case.
Thus our pleasant talk came to an abrupt end. Chapter 39. Consulting Laura. Tobias Gase made a deep impression on me. The memory of his home organized according to new principles of brotherly union, haunted my mind. After all, I also still considered myself the head of an earthly household and could well imagine how difficult it would be if I had found myself in a similar position. Would I have the courage to follow Tobias' example? I thought not. I could not see myself as capable of worrying my dear Zelia so much, nor would I accept such an imposition on her part. My observations of Tobias' household tortured my mind, and I could find no satisfactory answer to my questions. I felt so perplexed that the following day I decided to pay Liza a visit in my leisure time, in order to consult Laura, whom I trusted as a mother. I was welcomed with great joy and had to wait for an opportunity to talk calmly with my friend's mother. When the young people left for their usual evening entertainment, I found myself alone with my generous friend. Although embarrassed, I told her what was troubling me. She listened attentively and responded with a knowing smile, "You were right in coming to discuss this question with me. The solution of any soul-searching problem requires friendly cooperation." After a brief pause, she went on, "Tobias' case is but one example of countless similar arrangements here and in other spiritually evolved communities." "But it does shock our feelings, doesn't it?" I remarked earnestly. "From a merely human point of view, those things are even scandalous. However, my dear friend, we must now consider, above all, principles of a spiritual nature. So, Andre, we have to try to understand the evolutionary phases of life. Since we have to undergo a long period of animal existence, we cannot expect to get rid of it all of a sudden. We take centuries to emerge from the lower stratum. Sex is one of the most misunderstood of divine faculties. Thus, for the present, it won't be easy for you to grasp the evolved aspect of the domestic organization you visited yesterday. Still, you may be sure that great happiness reigns there, through the atmosphere of comprehension between the performers of the earthly drama. It isn't everyone who succeeds in substituting bonds of light for chains of darkness in such a short time. But is that a general rule?" I asked. "Do all men and women married more than once reorganize their home here to include all those with whom they may have formed affectionate ties?" "Don't jump to conclusions," continued Laura, patiently. "Go slowly. Many may feel affection but have no affinity. You must bear in mind that vibratory conditions are far more important here than on Earth. Tobias' case is an example of the victory of true fraternity, won by three souls struggling for the acquisition of an evolved understanding. Whoever does not conform to the law of fraternity and mutual respect will automatically be barred from crossing those frontiers. The somber regions of the shadowy zone are crowded with entities that failed in similar trials. As long as they go on hating, they remain as unsteady compass needles, moved by every antagonistic influence. Likewise, if they don't understand the truth, they succumb to the domination of falsehoods and are unable to enter the zones of superior spiritual activities. Countless are those who suffer for long years without spiritual relief, only because they will not conform to the laws of legitimate fraternity. What happens then?" I asked as Laura paused briefly, "since the poor souls on such trials aren't admitted to the spirit communities of evolved apprenticeship, where do they live?" "After truly infernal torments of their own inferior creation," she continued, "they return to the physical sphere to begin again the lesson they wouldn't learn in the spirit plane. Divine mercy grants them new bodies and complete oblivion of the past. They will then receive through blood ties those they deliberately shunned out of hate or incomprehension. We can thus realize and appreciate more the transcendental significance of Jesus' exhortations when he advises us to seek immediate reconciliation with our adversaries. We should follow this advice for our own good. Those who know how to use their time wisely can, on closing their earthly career, attain lofty spirit conditions with an untroubled conscience. Even though they may have to return to the flesh, their burden of trials and tribulations will be considerably lighter. Many spirits will spend centuries trying to overcome bitter feelings of hatred and resentment during their earthly sojourn, only to revert to them again on re-entering the spirit world. The problem of forgiveness, according to Jesus, is extremely serious,
and cannot be accomplished merely with lip service. For while a superficial pardon is but a question of words, those who would really forgive must dig deep into themselves and cast off the venomous dregs of former times. Laura fell silent, as if pondering the far-reaching import of the profound concepts she had just voiced. Availing myself on the pause, I remarked, "The experience of marriage is very sacred to me." My friends was not surprised at my observation, and replied, "To spirits still undergoing simple animal experiences, our conversation must be devoid of all interest, but we, who have already learned the importance of illumination with Christ, must take into due consideration not only the experience of matrimony but also all sexual experience, as it greatly affects the life of the soul. My wife Ha always occupied a sacred place in my heart, above all other affections." Nevertheless, at these words, remembering my past as an ordinary man, I could not help blushing. On hearing Liza's mother now, I recalled the time-honored words of the Old Testament, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, nor his wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ass, nor his ox, nor anything that is thy neighbor's." Suddenly, faced with Tobias' case, I felt unable to continue. Laura sensed my inner embarrassment and continued, "Wherever the task of readjusting wrongs is common to all, there must be room for a great brotherly understanding and a deep respect for the divine mercy that offers us so many opportunities to work out our amends. For the creature who has already acquired some spiritual enlightenment, every sexual experience assumes an unsuspected significance. This is why no truly redeeming mission can be fulfilled without legitimate brotherly understanding." Just a short time ago I heard a highly evolved instructor in the Ministry of Elevation declare that were he able he would materialize himself on the physical plane to teach the representatives of religious denominations in general, that, to be divine, all charity must be based on human brotherhood. My hostess then closed our talk by inviting me to see Heloisa, who was still confined to her room. After a short visit to the young newcomer from the physical plane and noticing with pleasure her marked improvement, I returned to the chambers of rectification immersed in deep thought. I was no longer concerned with Tobias' conduct nor Hilda's or Luciana's attitude. I was filled with a profound awe at the all-embracing issue of human fraternity. Chapter 40, As You Sow, So Shall You Reap. I didn't know how to explain my wish to visit the women's department of the chambers of rectification. Nevertheless, I spoke to Narcisse about it, and she immediately offered to take me there. "When the Father summons us to a certain place," she said kindly, "surely there is some work awaiting us there. Each situation in life has a desired end. Remember to watch for this principle in apparently causal visits. As long as our thoughts are turned to the practice of good, it won't be difficult to identify divine suggestions." That same day, she and I went in to find Mangia, the prestigious superintendent of the women's department. It wasn't hard to find her. In the ward I saw rows of women in immaculately well-kept beds, all of them pitiable human wrecks. Here and there I heard heart-rending cries and agonizing exclamations. Mangia, radiating the same kindness as Narcisse, welcomed me cordially. "I suppose you must be accustomed to these scenes by now. The situation is about the same in the men's department." And, with an expressive gesture to her companion, she went on, "Narcisse, will you please show our brother all the different sections that you think may be educational for him? The ward is open to you." On our way, we began discussing human vanity, always inclined to physical pleasures, and recalling observations and teachings on the subject. We reached Pavilion 7, where I saw rows of women lying in a long line of beds, each sat equally distant from the others. I was studying their faces when one caught my eye. Who could the woman with that particular embittered face be? She looked prematurely old and worn, her lips twitching with a frustrated expression of irony and resignation. Her eyes were dim and sorrowful, and her sight seemed to be defective. With a heavy heart, I restlessly searched my memory. In a few moments I remembered her from my past. It was Elisa, the same Lisa I had known in my youth. Suffering had changed her, but there was no doubt in my mind. I perfectly remember the day an old friend of my mother's brought the poor girl to our house to enter our service. At first there was nothing unusual in our relationship, but gradually we forgot ourselves. Abusing the relationship between one who orders and one who serves, we grew more and more intimate. Elisa seemed to be frivolous and thoughtless, and when we are alone she often referred to her earlier irresponsible adventures, breaking down the last barriers of self-restraint between us. One day, my mother called me to account. Such intimacy, she exhorted, was not good. It was quite right to be kind and generous to the maid, but our relationship should stay within wise limits. It was too late, though. We had already gone beyond those limits, and soon Elisa, lacking the courage to accuse me to my face, left our home. Time passed, and the episode receded in my memory to a mere incident in my life. But, as everything else, it was not blotted out of my mind, and here was Elisa before me, downtrodden and humbled. Where had that wretched creature lived, who so early in life had experienced such sufferings? Where had she come from? This case was not like Silvera's, in which I had shared responsibility with my father. Here, the debt was all mine. I was nervous and put to shame by the accusing reminiscences and, like a child anxious to be forgiven for wrongdoing, I turned to Narcisa for guidance. At times I admired the trust those saintly women inspired in me. I might never have had the courage to ask Minister Clarence for the explanations I had asked of Liza's mother. I probably would have acted otherwise had I been in Tobias' company at that moment. Considering that a generous and Christian woman is always a mother, I opened my heart to the kindly nurse, who seemed, by the way she looked at me, to understand everything. As I began to talk, I could hardly keep back my tears. I was only halfway through my painful confession when she interrupted me. "You needn't go on, Andre. I can already guess the end of your story. I fully realize your moral torture from my own personal experience. However, you mustn't indulge in destructive thoughts. Since the Lord has granted you the opportunity of meeting this sister, it must be because he thinks it's time to repay your debt. Don't be afraid," she said, sensing my indecision. "Go to her and try to comfort her. Remember, brother, that we always find the fruits of the good or evil we have sown." This statement isn't a mere doctrinal phrase, it's a universal reality. I have learned a great deal from similar situations. Blessed are the debtors who are ready to pay. Seeing that I had already made up my mind to atone for the wrong committed, she added, "Go on, but don't tell her who you are for the moment. Leave that for later, when you have already managed to help her. It won't be difficult, as she will continue to be almost blind for some time yet. By her aura, I can classify the poor thing as one of those unfortunate fallen women and defeated mothers." We approached Elisa's bed and I began to speak comfortingly to her. She told us her name, and that she had been brought to the chambers 3 months ago. Determined to humble myself before Narcisa so that the lesson should be indelibly written on my soul, I inquired, "You must have suffered a great deal, Elisa. Was yours an unhappy life?" Sensing the affectionate tone of my question, she smiled at me resignedly and said, "Painful experiences are always eloquent examples." I replied. The patient, who had undergone a deep moral transformation, reflected for a while, as if conjuring up the past, and began her story. "I wasted my life as do all those reckless women who exchange the blessed bread of work for the venomous squall of illusion. Born in an extremely poor home, I was still very young when I went into service in the home of a well-to-do businessman. He had a son who was as young as I. There my life underwent a great change. An undue intimacy gradually developed between his son and myself until at last all reaction on my part would have been useless. I forgot that God never denies work to those who wish to live worthily, and gave myself up to a series of painful experiences, which I need and are late. I tasted the good things of life, material comfort, luxury, pleasures and gay company. But they were soon followed by self-hatred, venereal diseases, hospitalization, abandonment and disillusion. In the end came blindness and physical death. In great despair I wandered for a long time, until one day I prayed so fervently to the Blessed Virgin that, for her sake, some heavenly messengers rescued me and brought me here to this generous house of assistance." "And who is that man that made you so unhappy?" I asked,
moved to tears. I heard my name and that of my parents, and anxiously asked her whether she hated him. All through my past suffering, I cursed him with mortal hatred, but Sister Najia has changed me. I realize now that to hate him I should have to hate myself. For in my case, the blame must be shared between us. So, I mustn't reproach anyone. Touched by her humility, I took her hand. A tear of remorseful repentance fell on it. "Listen, my friend," I said with strong emotion. "My name is also Andre, and I want to help you. From now on you may count on me. I'll do all I can for you." "And your voice," she remarked, ingenuously, "is like his." "Up to now," I went on, "I haven't had a family, so to speak, here in the Astral City. So you will be my dear sister, and can rely on my devoted friendship? Oh, how grateful I am to you," she exclaimed, drying her eyes which lit up with a radiant smile. "It's such a long time since I heard a kind voice comfort me with affectionate words. May Jesus bless you." At that moment, as my tears fell abundantly, Narcisa, in a motherly gesture, took both my hands and repeated Elise's words. "May Jesus bless you." Chapter 41, The Call to the Struggle. In the first days of September in 1939, the Astral City, like several other spirit colonies connected with American civilization, suffered the impact of the conflicting currents in the world of the incarnate. The Second World War was about to begin, and would be just as disturbing in the spirit spheres as it was destructive on the physical plane. Amongst us, there was considerable talk about the war in perspective. Many of us could hardly disguise our horror at the imminent social upheaval. It had long been known that the great brotherhoods of the East had been enduring the antagonistic vibrations of Japan and experiencing great difficulties. But now, curious facts of marked educational significance could be observed. Just as the noble spirit circles of old Asia were acting in silence, the Astral City started preparing itself for the same kind of work. The governor issued valuable exhortations bearing on fraternity and sympathy, particularly emphasizing the need to exercise special care in our thoughts, and in curbing our negative sentimental impulses. I saw that evolved spirits in these circumstances look on the aggressors not as enemies, but as trespassers, violating the universal order, whose criminal activities must be restrained. How unhappy are the peoples who become intoxicated with the wine of evil. Celestius said to me, "The temporary victories they may win will be so many steps down to their ruin, and the instruments of their final defeat." When a nation provokes a war, that nation is introducing disorder into the house of the Father, and will pay dearly for it. I observed that the higher zones of life rise in justifiable defense against the assaults of the forces of ignorance and darkness, gathered to spread anarchy and destruction. I was informed by my fellow workers that such an aggressive country naturally converts into a powerful nucleus, centralizing the forces of evil. Disregarding the immense dangers they are incurring, their peoples, except for the noble and wise spirits in their midst, are intoxicated by their contact with the elements of perversion they themselves have summoned from the dark regions. Large working communities become instruments of crime. Infernal legions descend upon the great centers of collective progress, transforming them into places of cruelty and horror. But, while the forces of darkness lay siege to the aggressors' minds, spirit groups from evolved spheres hasten to the aid of the victims. If we should feel sorry for an individual who acts in opposition to the law of goodness, even more should we pity a nation that forsakes justice. One afternoon, a few days after the first bombs had exploded on Polish territory, I was in the chambers of rectification with Tobias and Narcisa when an unforgettable clarion was heard for over 15 minutes. Deep emotion pervaded us all. It is a summons from a very high sphere to the services of assistance to the Earth, Narcisa kindly explained. It is a signal that war couldn't be avoided, it will be waged with terrible consequences to mankind, Tobias exclaimed, disquieted. Distance notwithstanding, all psychic life in America had its origin in Europe. We will have a difficult task preserving the New World. The clarion call continued, with strange, soul-stirring modulations. I noticed that a profound silence had fallen over the Ministry of Regeneration,